Stacey Mulcahy out of New York City. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft, and it's a little cold here with all the snow, so I got to stay inside today, and I built myself a DDR mat that I kind of tied into Unity. And so DDR mat is one of those little mats that you can kind of do the dancing. If you're a little bit bored, you want to go into a rabbit hole, go search YouTube for DDR mat, and you'll see amazing people who play this game, so the Dance Dance Revolution. But I kind of just built a simple mat out of sensors, and I'm going to show you how you can, at home, build this kind of basic sensor using a few simple materials. And I'm going to show you an example of what I built, and also another sample of tying it into something like Unity, tying it into something like Babylon.js in the browser. So that's what we're going to do today. So you can go off to one of the stores like Adafruit or SparkFun, and you can buy a pressure sensor. And they're usually about, you know, anywhere from $7 to $12, and they're square or they're little round pressure sensors, and you can get a really good sense of how much pressure has been put on them. They're really good for something that's like weight. They give you granularity, and so let's say a coffee pot sitting down or something like that would be really useful for those. I discovered a material from Adafruit. It's called Velostat. It looks like a garbage bag, right? Like, you look at this and you think, okay, why did they send me a trash bag? It comes in, you know, a size that I think it's like, you know, it's not very big, but you can get about, you know, a good couple of foot sensors out of here, hand sensors, whatever you need, even small ones. Doesn't cost you a whole lot. It's like $4. And if you start to add a conductive thread to this material, you can get the sense of, you know, if someone's pressing a pressure sensor, if someone's pushing down on it or not. And so you can kind of at home make your own ad hoc pressure sensors that are also fairly flexible. So you could, you know, again, put this on top of a jacket. You could use it, put it in your shoe. You could, you know, all sorts of things that you might want to do. What I did with this is I created a basic kind of pressure sensor, and I have an example of a foot pad that I built. It looks kind of like this, and again, we'll probably show a demo of this working. And so what I did for this is I thought, I wonder if I can get a signal coming out of it, and this is treated as an analog signal. And if I can get a signal, then I know that someone's, you know, put their foot down. And if I have four of these, I technically have a DDR or Dance Dance Revolution pad. And so to construct these, they're fairly simple, and I'm going to kind of just walk you through how you construct them. And again, all you need to do this is you need to buy Velostat, or, you know, there's a couple other, I think it's called like Linostat. There's a couple other materials. They're about $4. You get a fairly decent size square. And then you need to have some conductive thread. And so I had some kind of left over from some of the wearable projects I was doing. This is a very, very big spindle. But you can get a really kind of small amount of it, once again, fairly cheap. You could also probably just take a wire, take out the insulation, and use that as well. So again, probably things that you have lying around that you can go and build your own pressure sensors. So instead of spending $7, $10 on one, you can actually make one, you know, multiple fairly cheaply. And so to construct these, it's fairly simple. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch on my camera that shows, you know, it at a kind of higher granularity, and I'm just going to show you how to put one together very quickly. And then from there, I'll show you a couple examples of how, you know, using this, I tapped into a Flappy Bird game. So instead of pressing the space bar, you hit down on the sensor. And then I'll show you an example, again, of using this with Babylon.js to kind of set off a whole bunch of particles. Okay, I'm going to show you how to set up a basic pressure sensor with Velostat and conductive thread. I have two pieces of conductive thread here and a small piece of Velostat. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tape the one piece of the thread on one side of the Velostat, and I'm going to tape the next piece on the other side of the Velostat. And doing that, I need to leave a little bit of thread that's overhanging. Just like this. Okay, that's one side of it, and now I can do the other. Maybe
maybe start here. You can just use any kind of good old scotch tape that you have, as I am. Okay. And you see that that thread's kind of hanging off. And we now kind of have a sensor that we can clip to. So what we need to do now is we need to create some connections. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take two wires. It can be anything that you want. Okay, one's going to be for ground, and the other one's going to be for the analog signal. And instead of soldering this, we're going to test this one out. I usually try to test things out, and then I solder at the end. And what we want to do is we want to clip the end of this to an alligator clip, right? And we want to do the same for the next one. Okay, now that we have those two clipped to those, we want to clip to one end of the sensor, like this. And then we want to take the other one that we had and clip to that other side and other kind of overhanging of the sensor. All right, and then now what we need to do is we can now take these two items and put them into the breadboard and put them in at, you know, whatever analog input we want, and then to ground. And so what that's going to look like, it's, I'm going to show, I've already set it up. So we now have this hooked up. We've connected each side of that string to one of these alligator clips on each side. And probably just want to put it down like that, nice and flat. And this coverage will now send out a signal. And we've taken one of these clips and we've clipped to these yellow and black wires. Black is going into ground, okay, and the yellow is going to go into analog zero. And so what we have now is that we have a sensor that we can now start to use, and we're going to use a spark core to read that analog input at A0 to see what the values are. And we can start to work with it now. But that's the easiest way to hook up a pressure sensor that doesn't give you a whole bunch of granularity, but it does definitely give you if someone touched it.
So now that you kind of have that basic, small little sensor hooked up, and you kind of put it into, you know, trying to get the analog signal, you can use a bunch of microcontrollers to get this. Again, you can use a Raspberry Pi, you can use an Intel Edison, you can use Arduino, you can use whatever you want to use. In my case, I'm actually going to be using what's called a spark core. And a spark core, it's one of those devices I've been playing with a little bit. I'm just going to show you what it looks like outside of, you know, the whole thing that we did. And a spark core is basically a small microcontroller. It runs Node. It has, a whole bunch of digital and analog outputs, right? It's your traditional kind of microcontroller. One of the things about the spark core that's kind of nice is that you actually configure it online. And so what happens is that when you get one of these, you download the app. And again, you don't have to do it this way. You can actually do it through the command line and other ways. But for the average user who might not be as savvy with that, you can go online and you can log into your Spark Core account and you can get an app for your phone. And if you're on the same Wi-Fi network, it will look for your Spark Core and it will, you know, you can name it. You can now do all sorts of things with it. You can get some data back with it and you can configure it through the Wi-Fi. These devices are beautiful because they are Wi-Fi enabled. And so for $40, you go and you get one of these. It's running Node. You've got a whole bunch of, like, right now we've got 7 analog inputs and we've got, 7 digital inputs. For the average project, that's more than enough, right? And, you know, you can go and low battery power, and it's tiny. So you can go and hide it somewhere and no one's really going to see it running. And it's very easy to play with and configure. If you choose to kind of go through the web route in terms of working with it entirely through the web, they have an IDE that I'll show you. And so basically you go into the IDE and it kind of, if you're familiar with Arduino, it kind of looks like that. And you can start to do some basic stuff there, you know, reading your analog pins. And what you do is you actually code online and then it'll flash over the Wi-Fi. It'll flash your drive. So it takes care of all that stuff. Now, again, you can work with it just by hooking in your USB and going directly that way. That's probably better if you're going to be building more advanced applications. But for, you know, for what we're doing, this is perfect because you can go and actually say, I want to save the data on a sensor. So if there's a sensor, for example, we're going to be looking at an analog pin for our touch sensors. And so we're going to look at the values. And we can actually tell the Spark Core to save those values. And what it does is it saves it on the back end. And you're starting to see those things with a lot of devices and a lot of IoT frameworks, is that data is a big part of it. And where do you save it? And how can they make it easy for you? So Spark Core kind of makes it super easy. I'll show you how it works. And then what you can do with that data is a variety of things. And what I did in Unity, and also what I did in Babylon.js, is I just pull the REST API. Because what it happens is now, once you save the data, it exposes it with a very simple REST API. And all you need is basically your authentication token, and then you need kind of the ID of the device, which I'll show you how to get. So, you know, going through the REST API, I can just kind of do a polling. I can do a constant polling to see if there's been any update. Now, obviously, that's not necessarily real time. If you want to go real time, you're going to have to do something that's along the lines of, you know, WebSockets. And so that's a whole different ballpark. And that's something you'd probably end up doing, you know, coding directly to it. But if using the web API, you're using the web IDE and the web API, what I'm doing is actually perfectly fine. And we'll show an example of it working. So I'm going to walk you through just a little bit of the IDE very quickly. So that if you do get one of these and you want to get up and running, you know exactly what you need to do. And the first thing really does start with plugging in your Spark Core. It has a couple of little, it has an LED here that kind of, depending on the sequences and depending on the colors, it tells you different messages. So you need to look up the docs to make sure what's going on. If it's kind of flashing a rainbow at you, it's saying, okay, you know, like name the Spark Core, do this, that kind of thing. So the LED sequences and lights kind of have its own little language of what it's doing. Very, very easy to figure out. The documentation is actually really great. And, you know, once you start getting that going, you can start to write a little bit of code. You can decide what pins you want to access, you know, and you can write all that stuff kind of like you would for Arduino and an IDE locally on your computer, but you just do it through their web IDE. So why don't we jump in and I'll just kind of show you what that looks like. All right, once you've kind of logged into the Spark IO site, the first kind of thing that pops up is, you know, have you named your core? And usually you do that with an app, right? You'll do it on your phone. Once you've done that, you can pop into the IDE. It requires you, all of this stuff requires you to have kind of like a user account with Spark. And once you go in here, you can see that the IDE kind of looks like, you know, to me, it looks very much like Visual Studio, right? Just in the web, in the browser. And so you can start to use this much like you would Arduino. Everything is pretty much the same. Again, in most microprocessors, you have the idea of a startup or a setup and then a loop. So your setup's only called once, initially right when it's set up, and that's where you might initialize some variables, you know, that kind of thing, things that you only need to do once. And then a loop is what's being constantly, you know, drawn. So if we're looking at this example, the sketch that I wrote, again, I want to capture the pressure input from this item. And if, again, on our circuit that we set up, we put the pins here to the analog A0, right? So when you think of the analog pins, they always kind of go A0, A1, A2, A3, for example, like that, right? So once you start your brand new kind of sketch here, or your new kind of code sketch that you want to start and you want to put onto your Spark, it'll include a library for you here that you don't really need to worry about. And then, you know, you'll get the void set up and you'll get the void loop. So if we look at what I did, as I just basically I initialized a variable or a set of variable called pressure, and it's going to be, you know, float value 0.0, so I set it to double. And then in setup, what I did is that this is where you start to see that if you want to capture your values anywhere, you can actually save them. And just by calling a couple of things, all these values, when you set them, they will be automatically saved. And so this is really great because what this is doing is it's saving in the background for you, and that other devices, other Spark cores maybe a game, you know, anything that you want that might use this data anywhere else now can access it through the REST API. And so if we look in void setup, we have spark.variable, which means I'm basically declaring this variable as in, hey, Spark, declare this variable. Here's the one that I'm setting it to. Here it's value. And from here on in, what Spark's going to do in the background is always just going to save it to its database, and then you have access to it. So spark.variable, you say the name of the variable. So this is a name that you want basically in the database or through the REST API. So a nice friendly name. And then you basically, you know, say which variable is going to represent this. So it's pressure, and then the type, right? So maybe you might have a string. For example, you might have something else. And that's all you need to do to save these things to the Spark API. Now, the next line, all I'm doing, and this is pretty standard for most microcontrollers, is you got to set up your pins, right? Which pins are you using? Are they input or the output? So I'm going pin mode, the first analog pin, which is A0, and I'm saying, okay, give me input. Meaning I'm never going to write to it. I'm always just going to try to get information from it. And then the next line, again, very, very simple, you know, here is just a loop. And all I'm doing is I'm setting that pressure variable equal to reading that analog signal from it, right? And so, again, you know, really, really, really simple. And once you're done with that, you can save it. So you verify it here. And then you can flash your drive, right? And so basically what this will do is that if your Spark is connected onto the Wi-Fi, it will find your Spark, it will take this, and it will automatically kind of upload or flash your drive with this code, right? So, you know, right from the web IDE, it's doing all these things for you. You know, you got to start to look at, you know, once you flash your drive, for example, so let's see if we can do mine. It's going to run. You're going to get some stuff at the bottom. And then your Spark will kind of start to have a whole bunch of LED sequences lighting up, you know, and it's signaling that something's happening. Kind of like, don't worry about it. Things are working. And when it's ready, it will stop that whole animation sequence, and it'll kind of light like a teal blue, right? Greeny blue. Green. I don't know. It'll show that, and then you know you're kind of ready. And so what happens at this point now is that you can start to look at, you know, your items, if they're saving into the database, that kind of thing. Now, the other thing to walk through here, just to kind of get you familiar with a little bit of this stuff, is that in order to get any of the information from the REST API, you need to know the ID of your Spark core, and you need to know basically your authentication token. And so when you make any call to the REST API, you're always going to look to the device. You're going to look to the value in that device that you're saving. So, for example, we're saving pressure, this pressure variable, right? We could be saving multiple. We could have 5 pressure variables. We could have pressure and temperature and any of those kind of things. But you got to look to the device, look to what you're saving against the device, and then you got to add your kind of account token. And all that stuff can be found here. And so, obviously, I'm going to have to reinstate my account token after this. But if you look at settings and down here, cores, for example, I have about 4 cores sitting at home. Only one's connected right now, but I have 4. And so at certain times, I might need to know only data from one core. Maybe all cores need to talk to each other. Maybe they all do the same thing. They all kind of monitor temperature in different parts of my apartment, for example. So, you know, depending on how you do that, sometimes you need to go right to the core, that a specific one. Sometimes you can kind of just go right to all of them. And so for the cores here, you'll see I named mine aptly bitch core. And that's, you know, when you look at it, I can add a new core if I want to add a new core, and I'll find one. And if I go in here, you'll see what my device ID is. And so that's the device ID that I need to use when I'm trying to access things through a REST API. The other thing that you probably want to look at, and once again, they have docs in here, libraries that you can add, things like that. So you can start to get fairly complex in the web IDE, but again, if it doesn't meet your needs, you can also work with it in a different way. And, you know, you can start to look at settings. And so for settings, you're going to need your access token, and you can reset your token here. And so between the ID of your cores that you get from selecting the core and cores and this access token, you can now start to make calls through the browser. So if we look at an example that I kind of created with Babylon.js. So Babylon is kind of like a 3D, you know, framework built for JavaScript. And so I'm not an expert in 3D, not going to lie. But the one thing I love about 3D stuff is that they have particle effects. And I think particle effects are, you know, pretty awesome and give you a real big bang for your buck. And so what I did here is I wrote a little application, and I'll post the code for everyone. It's really not that crazy. I took one of the Babylon.js examples and I hacked it to what I wanted it to do. But what I did is now that I have my Spark core and I have my sensor set up that I showed you previously, I can now hit that sensor. And ideally, what this application should be doing is it should be pulling that web API, and I should be able to get effects. And so if I press down on it, I'm creating these particles. And if I keep pressing down on it, you know, and when I lift off, it will stop it, the particle engine. When I press it, it will start it. If I keep my hand down, it'll keep it running, right? So you can start to see that you can bring in a lot of a physical kind of element to your digital projects quite quickly. And this, you know, is just using the browser. And so you might see some kind of applications about you using a sensor of this sort. So in this example, I opened up Unity, and I got some graphics from opengameart.org, right? And I thought maybe I can just create the basic Unity game Flappy Bird, you know, clone 555,000, because we only have so many of them. But, you know, an easy example of providing some interactivity. So if I hit this, and I'm hitting, you know, the space bar, okay, you see that we got the basic version of this game kind of going, right? And I'm just hitting the space bar. Well, you know, what if at some point, instead of the space bar, I integrated a sensor, right? I integrated something physical outside of this environment. So now you can start to create things that are a little bit more interactive in different ways for a user. And so in Unity, what I did here is I'm going to press play again, and I'm just not going to hit the space bar. You're going to have to trust me that I'm hitting the sensor. You'll probably see me banging on it because, you know, it's really, these are perfect for something like to do with your foot or a lot of weight. You got to get it kind of distributed. But you'll see that I'm using that instead of the space bar to kind of add force to this element. So I'm going to hit play, and I'm hitting the sensor right now. And through this, right? Through this sensor, hold on, let's start again. So I'm hitting the sensor, and you'll see, right, I can get the motion there. You probably see the anger on my face, right? But not easy right here, for example. But, you know, if you had your foot there, you could be stomping, or you could be doing something along those lines. So you can start to see that you can start to add these very cheap, cost-effective sensors and building these experiences in different ways. If we look at the Unity code, and once again, I'll just post this really, really you know, after the fact, but if we look at the code for it, and if we look at the plane, all I did for the plane, it's going to open up in a good old mono develop here. All I did with the plane is I'm just calling right here. I'm totally repeating this call. And again, you know, ideally I'm going to want to move this over to a WebSocket where information is, you know, a little bit more real time. But now I'm just calling the API, and you'll see that it's the API, it goes to the devices, it goes to the device, it goes to what I named that variable, and I pass in my access token. And when I get that access token back, I can look at it, I get JSON back, I can parse it, I can see what the value is. If the value is less than 20, for example, this sensor, it kind of, when you start it, you got to look at the values, you got to look through calibration and see what you get back. It looked like I was getting about 120 on the high side without anything touching it. And as soon as I put pressure on it, I was getting anything from 20 less. And so any of this kind of stuff that you're dealing with, especially analog sensors, you're going to have to go and calibrate them a little bit. Sometimes people will put a pull-up sensor or pull-up resistor to kind of reduce the amount of current that's going through, things like that. You got to figure out what works for you. But for me, I kind of just look at these things and I calibrate and I say, oh, the high end's about 150 or whatever without me touching it. If I put any kind of pressure, I can start to figure out how much pressure and, you know, hit that threshold. And so here, all I did is if it's, you know, less than 20, I'm going through and I'm just calling a jump sequence and I'm just adding some force to that element. You know, same thing that I do if I'm hitting the space bar. So that's a really easy way to kind of integrate these things into different applications, whether it be a game or whether it be a website. It could be something even just a little bit more complex than that as well. So, you know, go home and make your own sensors and do them cheaply and quickly and prototype them until you get a format that works really well for you. And then, you know, then make them look pretty. Something like this I built, you know, again, we did it this morning and I showed you how to do it in just a couple of minutes. Doesn't look pretty, but, you know, you could put it into some casing. You could give it kind of like a nice physical representation and it would really amp up your project. So today we learned how to build your own sensors. So go off, make your own DDR mat, make your own shoes that light up, make your own shirts that you can tap on each side and something happens. Make your own really cool whoopee cushion. I mean, I don't know. The ideas are useless and endless. So thanks again for sticking around. All the code for both the Babylon.js example as well as for the Unity example, I'll put up on my GitHub repo. We'll post a link to it. If you have any questions, just holler at me. You can always find me on Twitter. And I'm more than happy to help you with your questions. And if you do something as a result of this, please show me. I love seeing what people build. It's always got to be better than what I've shown you, right? So have a good day. Thanks again.